Welcome to Commerce Experience, and thank you for being here. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. I'm very excited by today's show as we talk to Dr. Christian Moss, CDO at Thomann Music. Music House Thomann is a German-based retailer of musical instruments, along with studio, lighting, and pro audio equipment. And Thomann is, in fact, the largest online retailer in its category worldwide. Founded in 1954 as a family business in Treppendorf, Germany, part of the idyllic Bavarian village of Bergenbrock, that's still where they're headquartered and where Christian joins us from today. Thomann has a unique approach to omnichannel retailing and operations, and were an early mover in the late 90s, building an online presence. They've been committed to delivering a differentiated online experience, focusing on serving musicians ever since. I know you're going to enjoy hearing about that and Christian's many other insights he shared. Enjoy the show. Christian, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for inviting me.
Christian, we always start with the same question. What was your first job or role that dealt with e-commerce or digital marketing?
I started as a technical product manager for a search engine in Lycos back in the day, in Germany. That was Lycos back in the days. At that time, we still had own crawling and indexing technologies, and there was a lot of buzz about semantic web and heavyweight technologies like RDF. And the core question around that time was how we can leverage these technologies. And yeah, personally, I found they are way too heavy, and it took a bottom-up approach from unstructured data with social communities. And basically, all of the stuff that they did in the past, today we would call it AI. But back in the days, it was, most people regarded it as boring. I think it was quite a gift that I was receiving around that time. Look at the landscape today. I think 9 out of 10 projects that we are doing today, they are tech related. And if you work in a technical role, it's quite helpful. And I see a lot of companies that are struggling where the decision makers don't have this technical background. That's why digital transformation fails when you can call out the decisions on your own. So quite happy about this first role because it sets a route for everything which will come in the future. So I can also only advise everybody who is close to graduation, pick carefully your first role. It has a big impact on your future.
It can indeed. And of course, you also start developing your network right out of the gate. What year was that you were working with Lycos?
It was around 2004, 2005. That's already a while ago.
Yeah, it's a little while ago, right in the early days for sure.
Yeah, and so remember Lycos, then you're for sure over 40.
Yes, I remember Lycos. I remember Alta Vista, right? There was a number of search technologies back in the day that were key. And of course, it was around that time that Google really started to transform online search in a meaningful way and started to also change how people thought about interacting with search in a very meaningful way as well, and really kind of changed the landscape pretty quickly. Christian, unless someone's a musician, they probably are not that familiar with Thomann. I'd love for you to maybe start us off with just kind of an overview of Thomann and some of the history and where Thomann is today as the leading musical instruments retailer and marketplace really in the world. I'd love to maybe catch people up and in case they're not that familiar with Thomann.
Sure. So in a nutshell, we are a retailer dealing with music instruments and equipment like in audio sound solutions. Last year, we generated net revenues of close to 1.4 billion in euros. We were quite early movers actually in the field of e-commerce. We started in 96 as one of the first online shops in Germany, but the company itself already exists more than 50 years. It was basically a traditional retail store in a very green and hilly area of Germany, basically in no man's land. But when they started with the internet, it was pretty much clear that we have to skip the retail business. And after a couple of years, online revenues already outperformed the retail revenues. And as of today, we generate 98% of our revenues online, but we still have our store in general, and maybe I can speak about that a little bit later on. Important for us also as an educational center for our employees. Probably in Europe, you will find no other space where you can find more instruments than there. Of course, in the States, there's the colleagues from Sweetwater, they're also pretty big, but we are focusing on Europe.
And you do have kind of a unique approach to omnichannel, which started, of course, very early. I'm saying omnichannel because you do have a store, and that store is often a place where musicians will make a pilgrimage, if it's in a sense, right? It's known as a place to go, obviously engage with the employees and the product, but the store also serves as a warehouse, as a fulfillment location, and as you said, an employee training center. Talk a little bit about the store and kind of how that fits in with the model, even as you're distributing and selling online primarily.
We have some kind of Disneyland for musicians, basically, in a nutshell. So, and if you want to work as a musician in the music industry, probably there is a first address in Europe. And if you come to us, it's actually a great experience for the colleagues who are selling within the store to have access to this assortment. Employees actually in the retail store, they don't only sell, they also serve our customers on the phone. So therefore, we also have quite a flexible employee concept. You show up 2 to 3 times in our retail store, and the rest of the week you can work from home or actually in our customer service center to scale actually our knowledge, because all of these people who work there, they have in depth, they are musicians on their own on a very high level. And that's quite important for us also as a differentiator. So therefore, the retail store is an important element, although we just generate 2% of our revenues over there. And next to the retail store, I think also our service centers are quite significant, because if you have a challenge with your instrument, something is damaged, or you want one special feature, you can send it in and we tune it for you. And as a matter of fact, I think there's no other place in Germany where are more professionals actually who can really do the physical work with the instruments. And all of this together is something like, yeah, also a flywheel. We have all of this assortment there. The customers receive customer feedback. We also know where the issues are with these instruments. And we also use it to develop actually our own brands, our own music instruments. So that we benefit actually from all of this customer feedback. We don't have the ambition just to sell our own brands. It's more important that we prepare a really good access to the assortment to the customer. But everything, as you mentioned, is in one central place. And of course, there are challenges also that go along with this approach.
If I wanted to visit, is it near Munich that someone would want to make a side trip to visit the store and the warehouse and the service center?
Here we come with the first challenge. It's not that close to Munich. Well, the city where we are located is close to Bamberg. It is a very green area, and the village where we are located, I think Wikipedia says there are just living 200 people.
It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site too, right?
Yes, it's Bamberg, but we are located in Treppendorf, which is 18 kilometers away. And but people still make the effort because of the experience, of the quality of the service. And if you come, it's quite a nice experience to have this access to all of these instruments.
And that ethos that you've created around the store and the warehouse and the service center, you really do carry that online, and customers really come to appreciate that. Engaging with salespeople virtually or on the phone who have a lot of knowledge and can really help guide the customer into the right choice for them based on the genre they're going for, the sound they're going for, the production or performance that they're trying to kind of execute, right, as a musician, whether they're just an enthusiast or whether they're a professional. How do you bring that forward? How do you look to kind of infuse the online experience with that ethos that you've created over so many years?
That's probably the biggest challenge, but at the same time, also the biggest opportunity that we have to differentiate ourselves, to make this assortment as unique and convenient as possible. Let me give you some examples how we try to achieve it. If you play guitar, you also need this additional equipment, the pedal boards and stuff like that, so that it really sounds like heavy metal and so on. This is basically hardware that you need, but if you live in Norway or wherever, it's quite hard to reach us. We created a project which we called Stompenberg, and probably when the developer or built it, they watched a lot of Breaking Bad with Heisenberg, so that's where the name come from. And So basically what we do is that we all take the equipments and the special effects. We build them actually together with a Raspberry T on a server rack. And we did some research and development to make sure if you plug in your Electrica audio interface, that you can actually test all the special effects online. That's actually not that easy to reach. Then you can try it out. In a couple of weeks, we will launch a new server. If you're a drummer and use the cymbals, we built actually a robot. And this robot is actually hitting the cymbal at a certain place. We record everything. And then you can experience the sound and test it actually. And these kind of special services, they are quite crucial. And if you are not actually in the music industry or a musician on your own, it's actually also very hard to copy these kind of stuff. First, you need the equipment. So we are sampling there more than 1,000 cymbals. And you need to have the competence to bring it online in the right way and the right experience. This is actually quite important to make music accessible, to connect people to the music instrument, to have the experience, but also, from an economical point of view, reduce the return rates, of course.
I would imagine that with the growth of generative AI tools, which we've all been paying very close attention to over the last 6 to 12 months, that also opens up interesting opportunities, I would imagine, for Thomann to even expand on what you've already done, which is enabling kind of online trial virtually of the products, or to understand like in a consistent way the difference between, let's say, the sound of a cymbal for a percussionist. How do you foresee these kinds of tools further enhancing an online experience as I'm browsing like a wide assortment of different options and making sure that it's the right thing for what I'm looking to accomplish as a musician? How do you foresee generative AI impacting that?
I have maybe not that popular view on the topic, as I worked a little bit in this field in the past, and there are different views how you can look on this topic. So first of all, if customers chat with us, already as of today, a first question is, are you real? Are you human? Then if they give us a call and want some advice on some instrument, one of the first questions is, do you play the instrument on your own? So where I'm telling this, people want to speak with a real musician to have the real advice. Generative AI can help or service people. If the calls come in, transcribe actually the audio, and based on the transcript, already look up for some possible answers that might will show up. That can help. But during a phone call or during a chat, it's still important that there's a feeling that they speak with a real person. Therefore, we will probably also not completely automate everything. Of course, generate suggestions for our colleagues, but they should give us still an individual touch. Already this is actually a saving. I'm living here in Europe and I'm not in the States. We have here the GDPR and quite a strong data protection law. So we really have to make sure that we're there actually on a safe ground. And the other thing is, of course, in software development, the guys are playing around with it. But it's not about generative AI. The main thing is, what do you have to achieve this year actually as a company? What is the real customer issue? And can generative AI have an impact on this topic? And if not, then maybe focus on some other things. Too many people and decision makers, they are just attracted by the trends and they are not focusing on the real fundamentals of the business anymore. So I rather suggest cut out the noise.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that at all. I can't imagine, though, that there could be opportunities for some efficiencies in content and other things that could, play a role down the road. But I think your point of view and kind of the ethos that you've been focused on for so many years is really key. And I think it's also the audience that you're serving and the unique nature of the product and the intimacy with which a musician, that instrument is not only a tool, it's really an extension of themselves in many respects, right? To execute their vision. If they're creating music or obviously executing technically, if they're a classical musician and so on. And make sure that they're able to really express what they're trying to accomplish. So that human touch, I can see why that is so critical, in particular in this product category.
Of course, if you just buy some standard stuff, then it's fine. But if you're going for a violin, which is in a premium price segment, you want to speak with us. You want to make sure that the quality is good. You want to see the certificates and stuff like that. And it's a conversation. And it's actually also a tool, if you speak with our customers, to build up a relationship. And it's important and that they stick with us. And if it comes to content production, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. As a matter of fact, we also operate 30 content portals. We operate many YouTube channels and stuff like that. But there, we also speak actually about the experience of the instruments. And if I not use it, if I don't play it, I cannot simply let an AI generate the text. It would be simply wrong. Somebody has to touch the instrument to explain how it feels. And in these kind of content categories, if you want to describe the experience, you still have to play it. Otherwise, it's illegal. You're just inventing things. And but of course, I mean, everybody of my colleagues, they play around with it for some inspiration. That's nice. But it's also not at that level that it can answer everything.
Yeah, it's very interesting how these tools are commoditizing kind of low-level work, but it does not replace expertise or experience. And obviously, there's a lot of context that these tools can't serve, especially in such a unique category.
Music is all about emotions, really, and I always say what comes from the heart goes to the heart, and that's very important for us.
Stepping back a bit, how did the pandemic impact your business specifically? Obviously, a lot of musicians who were performing were impacted, venues were impacted, and so on. So there was probably a follow-on impact in some respects to the musical community, but curious how it impacted your business.
It did not impact us, and this is thanks to two reasons. On the one hand, it's the breadth and the depth of our product portfolio. We are not only selling music instruments, we also have other areas. And music instruments were not affected. On the other hand, we have a very international footprint. And depending on the country, it was very different. But what is quite interesting, as a matter of fact, this is not the first crisis with the pandemic. We had the financial crisis back in the years. There was a dot-com crash some years earlier. During all this crisis, we were never impacted. And I think the very simple answer to this question is why we were not impacted is, I think, music gives confidence. Maybe it sounds a little bit simple, but as a matter of fact, music gives confidence. If you're not in a good mood, turn on the music and bam, all the bad feelings go out. Music connects people. And this is one of the main reasons why we strongly believe that we were not impacted during all of this crisis. Usually it was more the thing. After a crisis, we had a little dip, but overall, Thomann was growing constantly since we went online. So overall, we're in a good condition. And what gives us more concerns if you look to the future is the overall economic condition. The inflation rates are running, increasing everywhere. They're still not going down. We have here the war in Eastern Europe. It's not that far away from here. You could see there's some insecurity actually from many people, which I can completely understand. But so far, we are still doing fine, which is good. We are also continuing to invest. We invest our own money, and there you think twice what you do. And but of course, it also gives us the flexibility to move fast. So this is actually, and we are not afraid to do decisions and call out big decisions. So this is an advantage. And having that said, the pandemic did not help us.
We're on the edge of something big, the future of AI-powered e-commerce. Join us this August, along with fellow industry leaders in digital commerce and AI, for live conversations about what e-commerce can achieve in a symbiotic future with AI. We'll talk about how AI fits into your business today, tomorrow, and for the limitless future ahead. In short, 2 days of thought-provoking conversation, perspective-shifting keynotes and sessions, and endless opportunities for growth. Connect with Bloomreach on your favorite social channel to learn more and watch live.
Yeah, I think that's kind of reflects in some ways also some differences between kind of the middle giants, as many people would say, although that often is used to refer to the B2B sector. But, you know, the kind of the mindset of many companies in Central Europe and in Germany kind of growing in a mindful way and not just chasing growth. And obviously that could have been a path, but then you're putting yourself in a leveraged position and there can be a lot of challenges with that. And then reflecting on the pandemic, I do think just even anecdotally, so many friends of mine, you know, turned back to their love of music, even started making instruments and things like that during that period of time because they had more time perhaps, but B, it gave them comfort and it gave them an opportunity to connect with something that was important to them that maybe as they grew older, they paid less attention to. And so in a way, art and music and writing, I think actually saw a resurgence during that period of time. And I think that for many people that continues, it may present challenges fitting that into your life as we kind of return to quote unquote normal. But nonetheless, I'd think, you know, music is one of those categories that may have even seen kind of a resurgence, even with touring and live performance and so on, obviously having to take a pause. So it's kind of interesting to think about how that would impact, you know, a business such as yours.
This impact was not that strong that they had to pause the concerts because the demand for music instruments was still actually on the rise. And now it's the other way around, actually. We benefit that the concerts are happening again, the events are happening again. And this is the advantage if you have quite a broad portfolio and you can deliver. A matter of fact, it's also important to know why we are not suffering. We've quite a big warehouse and a significant footprint here in Europe. And most of our competitors, they are way smaller. For them, the impact is way harder that we currently see. And maybe they don't have all this assortment that we have in our warehouses, so they simply cannot deliver in some cases. And there's a German saying, he says, a crisis, the devil does this shit basically actually on the biggest mountain. And you know what I mean? And in this case, we are one of the biggest retailers here in Europe. And we benefit from this actually situation that some other colleagues in smaller companies, that they are suffering a little bit more. But if you can deliver during these days and you cut out all of the supply chain issues, then you are fine. And we are in a good position and we are thankful for that, that we are in this situation.
Thomann obviously is working internationally. And I'm kind of interested how the model translates. And as you enter into a new market, what you need to really be thoughtful about in order to ensure that, you know, what has led to your success and differentiation, for example, in the German market or in Central Europe, translates as you extend into other markets. And I would imagine that that's a high bar to hit. It's not as simple as just opening a website. You need to think about a whole host of other things in order to ensure that what makes you so special and what enables you to have this great relationship with your customers translates to other markets. I'm really interested in how you're approaching that. And then obviously you've had a lot of experience working internationally and how you think about the importance of culture and language and all of these different components and what makes them the same as you work with musicians in different regions and what makes them different?
There are many different parts, so I have to answer in different steps to cover everything.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, it's a big question. It's a long question.
Yeah. So as a matter of fact, the cultural differences are huge. And entering a market which is rather small, for example, like Denmark, the effort is the same like entering a big market like France from a cultural point of view. You have to translate everything and you have to be how you do business actually over there. I mean, if you compare it with the States, and give you one example, from my point of view, US customers, they have actually high expectations and fast delivery times. So they got this from Amazon Prime and others. And of course, this is also appreciated in Germany, but also a considerable amount of people, they have also strong focus on environmental friendly packaging and delivery methods. And for that reason, we don't simply send out all our items for an order in separate packages. We consolidate everything in one package, which is quite unique. So for some other companies or marketplaces, if you order 10 books, probably you get 5-6 packages, depending for where they ship. We consolidate everything to make sure we have an environmental friendly footprint. And also saves us some shipping costs if we consolidate everything. On the other hand, it was quite a significant investment in the past to build up the logistic facility to support such a go-to-market approach. And then, of course, data privacy all over Europe is quite interesting and quite a challenge for us. Return policies and, yeah, but most importantly, it's a communication style, which is very different. And I think in the States, I experience it always very friendly, proactive, informal. I think also we Germans are friendly, but the way is a little bit more different. Communication style is way more direct in Germany. Give you one example, a friend of mine, she's from the States and her kids go here to school. And then they had a conversation with the teacher, how they perform. And she received very straight feedback and she was totally shocked. Oh my God, my poor kids, what's going on? So it's a rather direct form of communication style, and you have to be aware of this differences. Actually, also, we ship in way more than 100 countries, and therefore we have international customer service agents that are here sitting actually on our campus that speak natively with these people, and all of them are also musicians, and this is actually what actually also unites our colleagues, the music element. And music is a language of the world, is a little bit easier for us, but be strongly aware about the international differences. And there's a reasons, for example, why so many German companies fail when they enter the States, or why some American companies are struggling when they want to enter Europe. It's not that easy. And of course, if we speak about content production, which is a big and very big important thing, we operate more than 30 content channels actually. On YouTube or on media portals, we cannot simply translate it. You have to adjust it. You have to be aware about the little differences in the way how your speech, and that's the hard part. And that makes Europe hard because each country is different. And I lived in the Netherlands, in France. My wife is from Mexico. There are really big differences, and. If we hire people actually in a different market, we make sure these are local peoples. It doesn't make sense to send a German guy to France to build up the business. He will probably mess it up. And not in all cases, but be aware.
Yeah, indeed. Or in my case, I'm what's referred to as a third culture kid because I grew up outside my home country. And that's a whole other thing, right? Another question for you is that you at Thomann, you don't sell through online marketplaces. You've really kind of been very consistent about that. And I think that's always an interesting thing to talk about. I'd love to just kind of hear your thoughts on why that decision and why you don't use those kind of channels, for example, when you're opening up a new market to reach consumers. And obviously there's significant traffic on many of those marketplaces that would be attractive, but you've really towed the line. I'm interested in kind of hearing your thoughts about that.
Mm-hmm. The different things in it, first of all, it's a competitor. And secondly, and most importantly, and that's the main reason, we also partner with competitors. We cannot ensure the service and quality standards in serving our customers if you operate with such a platform. If you buy a Harley Benton guitar from us, which is one of our own brands, before we ship it, we make sure that a musician has it in its own hand, that it's tuned. Because if you simply a guitar or instruments, they are living instruments, they're out of route. You have to fine-tune them. And so a musician had them in their hand before we ship it. We cannot guarantee this kind of stuff with Amazon. You also have to know that usually the warranties in Europe are just only 2 years. We extend them out of own free choice to 3 years. And we want to know what is happening where with the stuff that we actually, from an economical point of view, can make sure that this makes sense. And then it's important for us, we think we want to be the best partner for a musician. We want to be the access point to the world of music instruments. It makes sure that we have our own assortment under control, that we can advise. We don't want to show up actually against some very cheap stuff, for example. Only because it's a guitar, it doesn't mean it's a good guitar, and we want to make sure that we have actually the influence. We still take this retail aspect very serious, so that we do a proper selection and try to create the best assortment for the customers. If you simply show up something on a big marketplace, it will show up something like everything else. And but the service point is more important, and as a via the customer service, we cannot leverage that actually via our marketplace. And the other aspect is, there's a big dominance of big platforms. It's not only Amazon, Google, Facebook, and so on. These are the big login platforms, basically. And also for that reason, we started already a couple of years ago to launch own portals, to have reach, to execute a first-party data strategy. So it's quite significant for us, actually, to have as many customer touch points as possible. And if you're considering to invest, even if it's a small amount for instrument, usually you just wake up and go to our website and say, hey, I order a new guitar. No. Usually you start searching for a guitar or for whatever it is, couple of weeks, maybe even months before, because, and you...
That's part of the fun.
Yeah, it's part of the fun. It's part of the experience. And we have a discussion about it, and we also operate music forums where are big discussions. So to give these people a home and a place, and on that way, we also generate data. And this data is unique data, which is owned by us. It's not accessible by anybody else. And during these days, I think it's quite important to have a first-party data strategy to differentiate yourself against the big platforms who have way more access to customer profiles with their advertising platforms and so on. But you need to be able to differentiate yourself. And if you operate this content portals, we have far more customer insights. And it's important then that you have the ability to operate an own tech stack on your own. And that's why we develop also everything in-house at Thomann. I prefer rather a small team. But if it comes also to employments, we have the philosophy, hire slowly, but invest a lot actually in your talents that they grow. If they stick a long time for us, they will over-deliver what you can actually even imagine. So that's important for us. Stay small and fast, and rather think twice how we can systematically work better actually than competitors. And I already mentioned a little bit earlier, 9 out of 10 projects within our company are related to software. So therefore, we think a lot actually how actually we fine-tune our delivery pipelines, product discovery, product delivery. These are important aspects actually. And these are just some paths to answer your question.
Yeah, no, that's great. And of course, you know, we're proud to partner with you in certain areas like product discovery, for example, where your team, you know, obviously focuses a lot on the core platform and the differentiators around how you engage with customers. You used some examples earlier of how you're doing that, but then there's an opportunity to blend in best of breed solutions to support something, for example, like, you know, machine learning backed, you know, product discovery solutions. So fascinating conversation, Christian. I'm super excited to ask you actually kind of the last question we ask every guest here on the podcast. And that is, what futuristic digital commerce innovation are you most looking forward to? Or alternatively, what do you think is terribly overhyped and we should just stop talking about? You kind of already answered the second half of that, but I'm really interested to hear your thoughts and your perspective coming from, you know, your vantage point and the category that you're so focused on.
Actually, probably most people will answer personalization, AI, or whatever. But these things are not that important for me. What I admire are companies that are able to execute fast. I think speed sales, especially if you're a retailer. And to get that, I think you have to get the basics right and cut out all the noise. By focusing on these topics, you are more successful than following certain technical trends or stuff like that. The core question at the very end is what everything which comes to the table, how will it impact your customer and which program for the customer will improve? And can you execute this kind of, and can you solve this problem actually in 1 year? Everything what you cannot deliver in 1 year is not actually relevant anymore because the world already changed. And therefore, just like I mentioned, I admire speed, companies that are able to execute fast because they will make some difference. It's not the big one who will eat the small one. It's a fast one. Therefore, we want speed sales.
Yeah, and things continue to change quickly, right? Things continue to change quickly. So agility, flexibility, and efficiency will always be super critical to capturing growth and to serve customers more and more effectively. And I would imagine that in your category too, there are renewables. Musicians need strings, they need reeds, they need skins for their percussion instruments, right? And these are things that are really important to them. And you need to be able to, you know, fulfill that very quickly at high quality, even if they do take then a month or two or even more to pick out their next, you know, bass or a guitar or what have you, right? So I would imagine those things are critical.
That's one thing, but more importantly, what is happening if a customer calls you and complains? Then you have to be fast and there it can make a difference. And the standard stuff with delivery times and that you have to pick up the phone fast, that's standard, you have to be fast. But the capability to capture the customer feedback, understand it, and react out of it and push it fast, that's a differentiator. And that's what I mean with speed.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. Christian, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. Really fascinating and great to hear more about it. And of course, for those of you listening, if you're a musician or you have a musician in your family or someone close to you, you should definitely check out Thomann. A phenomenal business and a great experience. Christian, thank you so much for sharing so much of the story and insights with us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
For all of you listening, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's been a pleasure to have you. Be safe, be well. Here's to good business.